Campylobacter, E. coli, Hepatitis A, Listeria, Norovirus, Salmonella, and Shigella are just some of the foodborne pathogens that lead us to ask, can the law protect us from bad food?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 631st edition of the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there in Lago Como who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio, with Nikki James on the boards. Aloha.
Aloha.
And producer Carol Stafford.
Hello there.
And folks, consider Michael Olson's second law of the food chain. The farther you go from the source of your food, the less control you have over what's in that food. And we now eat food that comes from a long ways away, from China and even beyond. As a consequence, we have very little control over what is in our food anymore. And some of that stuff in our food is like Campylobacter, E. coli, Hepatitis A, Listeria, Norovirus, Salmonella, and Shigella. Those things make us sick, very sick. So what are we going to do to protect ourselves from food that comes from a long, long ways away? 80% of us think the government should take charge of our food safety, but less than half of us, 48%, trust the government to actually do the job. And so today we ask, can the law protect us from bad food? Here to help us inquire for an answer, we have food safety lawyer Bill Marler from Marler Clark Law Firm up in Seattle, Washington. Bill, welcome to the Food Chain.
Good morning, Michael. How are you?
Very good, thank you. What the heck is a food safety lawyer?
Well, you know, it's someone who for the last 15, now 16 years, has sort of focused almost exclusively on representing victims of, you know, problems that occur in our food chain.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, over the last...
No shortage of business for you.
You know, unfortunately not. I mean, there have been, you know, ups and downs in the number of cases, and we can talk a lot about, you know, things that have worked well and things that haven't.
Mm-hmm.
But, no, it's unfortunately, it seems like it's never ending. And the last month that, as, you know, you're well aware, is seeing massive amounts of recalls, and seems like you can't pick up a paper without having something in it.
Right. Well, you know, Bill and I met as a consequence of the show we did on federalizing our farms. It was a subject was H.R. 875. And Bill wrote me and said, look, Michael, these bills will not stop farmers' markets or buying face-to-face, and you know it. And to which I fired back, I don't know it. And so we got into this wonderful conversation about foods and food safety. And I looked up Bill or MarlerClark.com and looked at what Bill was doing and realized that if anybody knows anything about food safety, it's a food safety lawyer. And so we kind of looked at some of the things he was doing. It's really amazing the amount of work that you have. Salmonella in pistachios, alfalfa sprouts and peanuts and peanut products, E. coli outbreaks in Chicago area child care facility, a Colorado stock show, and at the meats of R&S Meats. It occurs to me, Bill, that you are the law when it comes to food safety.
Well, you know, I think in some respects it's unfortunately the case. You know, civil litigation, you know, where a victim has been poisoned, mm-hmm. you know, usually a child with some sort of severe, you know, long-term problem. But civil litigation is a very blunt instrument, you know, for social change. But unfortunately, as our food chain has rapidly, you know, industrialized, and as our government has sort of walked away from its responsibility of managing, you know, our food supply in any sort of safe way, you know, it's left to the victims, it's left to the consumers to sort of pick up the pieces. And, you know, that's why, frankly, I'm so busy.
Well, producer Carol Stafford and I were talking before the show, and she said it's kind of like the police, you know, the police can't arrest anybody until after they kill you. And that's kind of what your job is, too, is you can't really help anybody until somebody gets sick, and then you can go after the miscreant and club them over the head with civil litigation. And,
right.
And,
well, you know, I've tried to sort of approach it slightly different than, you know, maybe the typical lawyer that, you know, people have grown accustomed to in, you know, personal injury cases. You know, I do represent, and proudly so, represent, you know, mostly kids who get sick by food to eat. But I also have a nonprofit company where I actually go out and talk to companies about why it's a bad idea to poison their customers. And, you know, for the last, you know, 15 years have, which got us to talking about these various food safety bills, for the last 15 years have pushed legislation, testified, you know, in front of Congress, had clients testify in front of Congress. So, you know, I've actually been trying to fix the system in addition to sort of, you know, bringing, as you said, miscreants, you know, to sort of to heal. But it's been very frustrating. I mean, the process has been very frustrating.
Well, I just this morning ran across an interesting survey of public attitudes with respect to food safety. 93% of adults say food manufacturers, growers, or suppliers of food should be held legally responsible when individuals are fatally sickened by tainted food. So if you're selling poisoned food and somebody dies, you should be personally held liable. Do we do that now? Do we hold people personally liable when their company sells bad food?
You know, that's a great question. And this is sound a little bit like the NRA, but, you know, we have the laws in place to actually make, you know, corporate individuals, owners of businesses, personally responsible criminally through either misdemeanors or felonies, making them personally responsible for, you know, poisoning people in the food supply. But in 15, 16 years of handling nearly every major foodborne illness outbreak in America, I can count two or three times, frankly, where there's ever been criminal liability on top of a corporation or corporate leaders.
Mm-hmm.
So the reality is that
why is the reality the reality? I mean, you're talking 15 years, you're going back through, you know, several political administrations, so it seems to be endemic throughout, you know.
I think ultimately that somehow prosecutors, and I'm talking on a local, state, and national level, just have not had the thought to criminally prosecute companies who poison consumers. I mean, we go after people who, you know, smoke dope or, you know, drink and drive, and we put them in jail. But we seldom, if ever, go after companies who, you know, poison their consumers.
So essentially, then, if we don't go after people, what we do go after is their business.
But most to be honest with you, most of the time, those businesses are insured.
Right, that's what I was going to get at.
Yeah.
So we get at go after their business, which means that their insurance pays, which means who pays?
Well, ultimately, you know, those are all passed through to the consumer.
So the people who are getting poisoned are really the people who are paying.
In a broad sense, you're absolutely right.
Makes all the sense in the world to me.
Well, the reality is that, for us generally as a population, it makes no sense. Individually to a child who may face multiple kidney transplants or is paralyzed, obviously there needs to be some way of helping them through their lives. So,
and you are the law. Because who else is doing it?
Well, you know, our government is, you know, not only has failed from a prosecutorial perspective, I mean, I certainly wouldn't advocate a Chinese approach to consumer safety.
Which is to say, chop off their heads.
Exactly. I probably wouldn't go that far, but certainly there have been, you know, innumerable outbreaks of foodborne illness where it was absolutely clear, the peanut problem here recently, where
we're going to have to take a quick break, Bill, but let's
sure.
pick that up when we get back. Folks, this
Absolutely.
Is the Food Chain. Michael Olson here. We're talking food safety. Do you think the law can protect us from bad food? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. This is the Food Chain. Michael Olson with Bill Marler and you. Pick up your phone and join us. Can the law protect us from bad food? Right back. Do stay tuned.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of Metro Farm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. Metro Farm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. Metro Farm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. Metro Farm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of Metro Farm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Does good food go bad? Hello out there, Michael Olson here. This is the Food Chain radio program, and you're tuned into a discussion of food safety with Bill Marler, who is a food safety lawyer with Marler Clark Law Firm up in Seattle, Washington. But Bill, you work with people who have become sickened by bad food all over the country, right?
I do.
And a lot of business these days, because it seems like whenever we open the newspaper, there's something in the newspaper about good food gone bad, making people very, very sick. How sick do they get?
Well, in some respects, it varies by the type of bacteria or virus.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the CDC estimates that there's about 76 million Americans who are sickened each year. Most of those, fortunately, the vast majority are, you know, sick for a few days and, you know, get better. But there are, you know, quite nearly a half a million people who are hospitalized. Some quite seriously develop hemolytic uremic syndrome from E. coli contamination, require dialysis to survive, and then face a lifetime of complications.
Wow.
Just in this recent salmonella outbreak involving Peanut Corporation of America, you know, nearly 700 Americans were sickened. There have been 9 deaths, which is, you know, just obviously a very tragic situation.
Yes. So where does good food go bad? I mean, the peanut growing in the field is okay if you go out there and eat the peanut in the field. Where does the good food go bad? And the reason I bring this up, Bill, is because this is probably where you and I got to know each other in a conversation about H.R. 875, which is a piece of legislation introduced by Rosa DeLauro of Connecticut, I believe it is. And Congresswoman DeLauro's legislation suggests that the government should take over essentially the entire food chain. And so you and I got into a discussion. I expressed some reservations about the government taking over everything, and you expressed some reservations about it having any adverse effects on local agriculture. But I maintain that the money will tell government how to do things, and those things that will make it too expensive for the money's competitions, the money will tell the government what to do, and the money will tell the government how to get rid of its own competition. And that's my great fear of government legislation.
Right. I Michael, I absolutely respect you know, your opinion on that. And I a couple points. And I think this is really important. You know, in 15 years, I keep saying 15, now it's 16. I'm getting old. In 16 years of doing food cases, there have been no instances where we've had cases involving small farmers or farmers markets.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I live on an island across from Seattle, and, you know, it's very much farmers market is
sure
the way people do things. And as a family, you know, we're very acutely aware, probably more so than most people, about the longer the food chain, the more likely it is to have a problem.
Trouble, yeah.
And so, you know, my point with respect to the food safety legislation and 875, and there are, yeah, frankly, nearly a dozen other competing pieces of legislation, is that we need to do, absolutely need to do something about the big manufacturers.
Well,
and I'm right there with you to...
So report. I think we're kind of in agreement here, because
yeah.
I'm holding here in my hands a list, a 13-page long list of 160 food contamination incidents in 2007.
Mm-hmm.
160 of them, not one was
right.
from local agriculture. So
right.
I look at this and I think we do need somebody to watch over us for those foods that come from long distances.
Mm-hmm.
So the question today is, can the law do it?
Well, I think that it's difficult. I mean, it's difficult, but not impossible.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think we not only have to look at going after criminally, sort of to disincentivize large corporations from, you know, poisoning its customers, but, you know, we really have to look at how our food chain is managed and really start to look at things on a much more regional basis. And I'll give you an example. I mean, if you think about the peanut
which is
salmonella outbreak.
The Peanut Corporation of America is a great example.
It is.
Because we all either love peanuts or are allergic to them, one of the two, right?
Right.
And so what over the course of years, what happened in the peanut world is that peanut companies started off as small peanut farmers selling to their friends and neighbors, and then those businesses got bought up by somebody a little bit bigger who consolidated the industry, and eventually the Peanut Corporation of America is like the source for peanut and peanut products.
But, you know, unfortunately, I mean, in many respects you're correct, but on the other hand, too, PCA was only producing about 1.5% of all peanut paste and peanut butter in the United States. But their reach was absolutely incredible. I mean, 4,800 products, 200 manufacturers have recalled products. And I think that sort of, in many respects, underscores the problem of, you know, a relatively small producer who ships products all over the country. And I think one of the ways we need to sort of deal with food safety and safety of you know, our citizens is to sort of, in many respects, interrupt that, how long that food chain
is. Food chain is. Now, haven't we kind of done that in a respect? Because I know there are laws that prevent interstate sales of foods. For example, raw milk.
Mm-hmm.
You can sell raw milk in some cases. You can, at any rate. You can sell it locally, but you can't sell it across state lines. Is that what you're talking about?
No, I mean, not really. I mean, raw milk is, I think that may be the only food item that I'm aware of that has interstate regulatory
mm-hmm.
oversight. And that's sort of a long historical process. And raw milk is a very emotional,
that's for sure.
food item. And so... and this interstate regulation of raw milk interstate goes back, you know, decades and decades.
Right.
And they've FDA pretty much left to the states to sort of determine on a case-by-case basis how to do that. What I'm really talking about is sort of incentivizing, you know, a more regional approach to, you know, agriculture. And it's not going to be a simple thing because we're all so used to, you know, being able to get, you know, fresh fruits and vegetables in the middle of winter.
Which aren't really fresh when it gets right down.
Yeah, but I mean, but you know, the reality is I'm old enough at 51 to remember that you used to not be able to get certain, you know, foods in the wintertime.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, I think in many respects we have to sort of readjust, and whether that's both for food safety reasons, you know, biosecurity reasons, environmental reasons with respect to, you know, the usage of carbon fuels. I mean, all of those things are in play. But again, you know, the longer the food chain, the more likely it is, and the bigger the food chain, the more likely there is if one problem occurs.
Sounds suspiciously like Michael Olson's second law of the food chain. The farther you go from the source of your food, the less control you have over what's in that food.
Folks, I think we should put that on all the politicians' desks.
Folks, this is the Food Chain. Michael Olson here. We're talking with Bill Marler, who's a food safety lawyer with the Marler Clark Law Firm in Seattle, Washington, working with food safety issues around the country. Question today, can the law protect us from bad food? What do you think? 831-479-1080 is the phone number today, 831-479-1080. Pick up your phone and join us. When we get back, we're going to talk with Bill about his war stories. You have some stories about the food safety wars and maybe from Peanut Corporation of America. Right back. Campylobacter, E. coli, hepatitis A, listeria, norovirus, salmonella, and shigella are just some of the foodborne pathogens that lead us to ask, can the law protect us from bad food? Well, Bill Marler, who is a food safety lawyer from the Marler Clark Law Firm up in Seattle, Washington. Bill, you ever been on a cruise ship?
No, I never have.
Norovirus. Holy smokes. You get on a cruise ship and you go out in the middle of the ocean and away you go. It's just like everybody's
college campus.
Sick.
College campus. There's an outbreak of norovirus at Michigan State University right now. There was another one in New York just a week ago. Norovirus is probably the, you know, of all of the foodborne illnesses, the main one. Fortunately for the vast majority of people, it's horrible for a few days, but people get over it.
Yeah. Well, so, some of them food outbreaks do have problems. Let's look at some of them that you work with, Bill, and talk a little bit about them. Let's go to the Peanut Corporation of America. Recently, what, 700 people were sickened by peanuts and peanut products?
Yeah, and you know, and that's the CDC estimates for every one of those people, one of those 700 people counted, they miss 38 of them. So the outbreak, you know, is well into the, you know, 20,000 people. But we just have such a bad surveillance system in the United States for foodborne illness that we miss a lot of folks.
So tell us what happened. Where did the good food go bad? Where did the good peanut go bad in this situation?
Well, what appears to have happened, and we know quite a bit about this case pretty quickly because Congress has had at least two hearings on it so far, and the feds have gone in and seized all the documents and mm-hmm. done tests and whatnot. But clearly what had happened is that there was a problem in the plant where salmonella was present, likely present from infestation of rats and birds, which salmonella is a fecal bacteria, so rats and birds were in the plant. And then, although salmonella doesn't tend to grow well in peanuts or peanut butter or peanut paste, there were leaks in the roof of the building, which allowed moisture to enter, which sort of exacerbated the salmonella problem. And that's exactly what happened in 2007 at the ConAgra plant, which happened to be 75 miles north of the Peanut Corporation of America plant in Blakely, Georgia.
Hmm.
So it's exact, you know, in many respects, it's like the Bill Murray movie Groundhog Day. It's the same thing, you know, all over again.
So it seems, and furthermore, this happened not only in one Peanut Corporation of America plant, but also, I understand, one in Texas as well?
Right, and that plant, which was absolutely under the radar, it was not registered. In fact, the Washington Post just reported, yesterday that 20 peanut butter facilities are, you know, actually operating, putting food in the food chain that have never registered, have never been inspected, ever.
Mm-hmm. So
it's a, and in the PCA case, I think is probably, you know, one of those that you can look at and say, well, it's just because, frankly, the owner was a tad more evil than most, where they were testing for salmonella, likely because one of the big suppliers was asking them to, and knowingly shipping product that was tainted with salmonella.
So is this a case where the manufacturer just gets so big that they just can't keep track?
Well,
or don't want to pay somebody to keep track?
In some respects, I think this manufacturer is relatively a small player.
Mm-hmm.
The plants, I mean, they were producing a substantial amount of product, but they frankly just weren't investing in, you know, pretty basic food safety technology, like not having rats and birds in your manufacturing facility.
Now, who'd have thunk of that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's the one way to solve the problem is not have, feces, you know, near
right.
a finished product, and that was ultimately what the cause of this outbreak was: is rats and birds in the plant. And
so the product was contaminated at the manufacturer's plant in Georgia and in Texas, and who knows where else. So the manufacturer takes this product and sells it up the food chain to probably manufacturers, right? Food manufacturers?
Correct.
Now, why didn't the food manufacturers give a squat what was going on with the peanut butter?
Well, if you that's going to be a question that probably will take a while to sort of parse out. We do have a little information because they were put under oath and were asked to testify in front of Congress. But in my experience, although food safety at big manufacturers, and I'm talking the level of a ConAgra or a Cargill or a mm-hmm. Kellogg or Kraft, their interest is, in some respect, lip service as relates to food safety. What they're mostly interested in is product and a steady stream of product at a price that they like.
Cheap food.
Yeah.
Which goes to Michael Olson's third law of the food chain. Cheap food isn't.
And, yeah, because there's the externalities that, cheap gets, you know, something gets pushed off somewhere else.
Right.
Cheap food, it may be that food is so cheap that it winds up poisoning the next-door neighbor kid.
Mm-hmm. Which is what happened with Peanut Corporation. So the manufacturers of Peanut Corporation of America's raw materials took the product and packaged it into how many different products?
There are, at this point, I've stopped, frankly, looking at the FDA recall site, but my last week I looked at it, it was over 4,800 products.
4,800 food products?
Yep.
So yep. That's so many products you don't even know.
No, it's almost like recall overload. And, you know, and here we are.
It's like recalling all the food in America.
Well, it is, but this is the largest food recall in U.S. history by far. I mean, they estimate that at this point that this food recall in and of itself has cost the economy over $1.5 billion.
Cheap food.
Well, you know, think about
how much it would have cost this company to put up to fix the roof.
Chase the rats out.
Chase the rats out and keep the birds out. I mean, I think that's sort of the nutty thing about, this.
No pun intended, right?
Yeah, sorry. The nutty thing about this is that so many of our food safety problems can be solved relatively, you know, quickly and cheaply because the costs long term, you know, are pretty devastating.
Well, when we get back from this quick break, I'd like to ask you, Bill Marler, a food safety lawyer for Marler Clark Law Firm, when do you come in to the picture in a situation like that which happened at the Peanut Corporation of America, and what do you do? And we will be right back to folks. This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here. We are talking food safety today, and we're asking the very basic question, can the law protect us from bad food? What responsibility do you and I have for watching over our own selves in a situation where one company can manufacture ingredients that go into 4,800 different food items? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Right back. Please do stay tuned. Well, the Peanut Corporation of America could have spent a couple thousand dollars to keep the rats out of their peanut factory, but they didn't. And so the rats defecated into the peanut butter, and 700 people got sick all across the United States. But not only that, you and I, as taxpayers, had to spend over $1 billion to clean up the mess. And thus is the nature of cheap food. So how on earth do we prevent situations like this from happening? Can we pass a law that will protect us from bad food? What do you think? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. I am Michael Olson. This is The Food Chain. Today we're talking with Bill Marler from Marler Clark. So, Bill, when do you come in to the story?
Somewhat at the... Partly sort of like in the third act, I suppose. You know, usually after, you know, government has failed to inspect. I mean, mm-hmm. One of the things, too, is just using PCA.
Why did the government fail to inspect? Don't they already have the responsibility to look over us on this situation?
Well, they certainly have the responsibility, but FDA has... I mean, the last time they were in the PCA facility was in 2001.
Mm-hmm.
So part of it has to do with, you know, the mandate of FDA. Part of it has to do with just simply not having the resources.
Essentially, we'd have to hire several hundred thousand food inspectors.
Well, I don't think it'd have to be quite that much, and I think there are ways of sort of focusing our attention on, you know, the most risky products. Again, you know, the longer the food chain, the bigger the manufacturer, the more concern you have to have. And that's just a reality. But, you know, I usually show up somewhere along the line after a company has, you know, failed to do what they should do.
And the people who use that company's products to manufacture other foods, and those people who sell those foods, and those people who retail those foods.
Yeah, when they've failed, government's failed, and people are sick, that's usually when I get a phone call. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I can, you know, there have been heartbreaking phone calls.
So essentially, your job is to come in after the victim's been shot or murdered.
The deaths are...
Or at least injured, or what have you. But after the damage has been done,
right.
You get
and
the
And then problem. my job sometimes is to try to figure out what food or what producer, you know, shot and killed the person or maimed them. Sometimes I'm very successful at that, other times less so.
Uh-huh.
Frankly, depends.
So, in a situation like Peanut Corporation of America, who's guilty?
Well, in many respects, the cheap food and the food chain is. But ultimately, what will happen is PCA, its
insurance policy, its company, it's now gone bankrupt.
Right.
Kellogg, which was, I'd say, about 90% of the people who've been sickened, of that 700 people, about 90% of them ate a Kellogg product. Although
what was the product?
Those little crackers, those little orange.
Oh, really? Those little peanut butter cracker things, squares?
And vending machine.
Uh-huh.
The vast majority of the victims that we've seen ate those products.
Uh-huh.
There was a smaller subset of the 9 folks who died, all seemed to have eaten peanut butter that was manufactured in 5-gallon cans.
Industrial stuff, then.
Industrial stuff that went into retirement centers.
Hmm.
So, I mean, it was like the worst possible place to have a contamination.
Because the senior citizens don't have the wherewithal to fight things. Yeah,
and so it's usually, in these cases, it's usually the vast majority of my clients are either the very young or the very old.
So the Peanut Corporation sells bad food that sickens 600-700 people, and it throws up its arms and say, I'm bankrupt, and runs for the hills.
Well, they do, and I think they're also being chased by the federal prosecutor and the FBI. But I'm certainly monitoring what happens there. We're now dealing with a bankruptcy court, a trustee, insurance companies, and our goal now is to try to figure out a way to compensate people for medical bills, lost wages. Mm-hmm. Long-term complications, and then in the situations of families, the difficult thing to do is to try to figure out a way to compensate for the loss of a family member.
So the Peanut Corporation of America is bankrupt, runs off for the hills, but what you say 70% of the problem was in Kellogg's Corporation's mm-hmm. peanut butter crackers. So mm-hmm. what about Kellogg's?
They'll be on the hook. I mean, ultimately, the law does, again, in not a complete way and not the most elegant way, the law does work its way up the food chain, to those that profit from mm-hmm. the product. So Kellogg will have to ultimately deal, with its, in many respects, its failure to really know where that product was being manufactured.
But Kellogg's really doesn't have to, in effect, deal with this because they just go to their insurance company and say, pay the bill.
Although it probably doesn't, in many respects, economically matter, Kellogg will have a substantial deductible. So the money right. that they'll probably be paying for this will come out of, in a sense, Kellogg's or the shareholders' pocket.
Okay, we're going to have to take a quick break right back. But when we get back, we'll finish up with what you and I can do to protect ourselves if the law can't right back. Well, what do you think out there? Can the government pass a law that will protect us from bad food? This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here, and that is the subject today as we talk with Bill Marler, who is a food safety attorney with Marler Clark Law Firm up in Seattle. And we're going to go quickly to Mary, who has a question. Mary, welcome to The Food Chain. Go ahead.
Thank you, Michael, for this show. My question is, why do the feds insist on establishing new laws for small farmers and other farmers in the United States when the issue is really in the processing of foods, which ultimately is the federal responsibility? Why are they trying to fix something that isn't broken?
Good question, and my question as well. Bill, what do you think?
I guess the question is that, focusing on small farms and I absolutely agree that the focus needs to be on the big manufacturers and how we produce our food nationally. I absolutely believe that, small farmers, organic farmers, need to engage right now with the Congress to sort of make sure that sort of a one-size-fits-all legislation doesn't pass. That's certainly been my message to congressmen and women when I've been back there, and I've been back there a lot talking about
what I perceive to be the problem, and I agree with your caller, that the problem isn't, you know, in small farms. And I think we need to adjust the legislation accordingly.
Well, thank you very much for that call, Mary. Bill Marler, what on earth can we do? What kind of law can we pass that would protect us? And would you trust it? A recent survey said 80% of the people said the government should pass a law to protect us from bad food, but 48% don't believe the government can do the job. Do you think the government can pass a law that will protect us?
Not fully. I mean, I think there's two things that have to happen in many respects simultaneously. I think we have to come to grips with the fact that our industrialized, you know, overly manufactured food system doesn't work, and how to sort of unwind that in a way that still allows us to feed a growing population is not a simple, you know, task. Can be done, but not a simple task. In the interim, I think you have to figure out a way to economically encourage small farm regionalization of food products, and at the same time, you know, giving government inspectors, you know, whether it be state, local, or federal, the ability to inspect and test the large manufacturers that exist right now that are, you know, sickening us. So it's a long-term process. It's a long-term problem, but we've taken, you know, 100 years to get to this mess, and it's going to take us a while to unwind it.
Well, I always seem to hate it when I agree with one of my guests like I do you, but I apparently agree with you a lot this time. Maybe we can find something we disagree with down the line and have some fun. But
I'm sure there is.
Not this time.
I apologize.
Well, Bill Marler, from food safety lawyer from Marler Clark Law Firm, and it occurs to me that you really are the only one right now that's looking out for us, because I don't think anybody else is. This has been The Food Chain. Michael Olson here. Stay tuned next week for more What's Eating What Radio. And remember, cheap food isn't.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.